Hey, everybody. If you want the full uncensored episode, be sure to click the link below to join the Fight Club on Patreon. And don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe.
So with all these emotions and all these the intensity and all these things on the side of fighting, what was it like for you to actually score a goal?
Oh, well, that's obviously always awesome.
Was it like just as high of a feeling? Would you rather score a goal than fight?
It's a different feeling. Nux, that's why Nux has got that great little shit-eating grin. He knows.
Yeah. So, my favorite thing. There is nothing for me. I don't compare it to winning a fight or knocking someone out. Scoring a goal in the NHL, not just a goal, but an important goal, is friggin' incredible. To me, it was it was no better feeling. I loved it.
That'll be a suspension. That'll be a fine. Nyland going ballistic. He's a freaking madman.
I'm Chris Nyland, and this is the Raw Knuckles Podcast. Trevor Gillies, welcome to the Raw Knuckles Podcast. Awesome to have you here with Tim and I. Tim and I had actually spoken about you. You two had played together for a short time, I guess, in Maine. Here's where I want to start with you. Did you ever get sick of doing what you were doing, fighting all the time in hockey? Did you ever get sick of it?
No, absolutely not. I loved it, Nux. Truly loved the role. Loved doing the dirty work so the good guys could win, brother, just like you. You know, towards the end, it got a little harder because these guys were really young, even though I was in lower levels in the East Coast League. You know, you got some, there wasn't a lot of takers, but you got a lot of young, hungry Lions that would come up with respect and ask me in warmups. They'd like to have me on their fight card type deal. And I'd oblige, you know, I wasn't as strong, wasn't as fast, but, you know, did well. And, you know, I had a lot of great guys give me a shot when I was young coming up in the American League, like, you know, Mel Engelstad, Stone Cold Steve McClaren, guys like that. So now I love my job. I mean, obviously I would have liked to have scored 20 a year like you. I would have made a lot more money. I probably wouldn't have to work now, but no, I enjoyed the job. You know, it's the hardest job in pro sports. But I loved every minute of it.
Do you remember your first fight, your first pro fight?
No, man. I don't remember.
There you go, Tim.
If we're being honest, Stapes, I mean, no, man. I mean, I don't know. I had a lot, buddy. Like, you know, I had 19 years doing the job. I can't see you right now, Stapes. I can see your window. But, man, you look good, fella. You look like you changed the day since you came out of college to the Portland Pirates. That was a hell of a team we had, huh?
Oh, that was so much fun. And you were, yeah, that was awesome. We did have a really good team. Crazy team. We had a lot of guys, right?
The whole team played in the NHL fun. Pretty much.
I know.
So, Trevor, the growing up in Ontario as a young kid, were you a fan of the Leafs?
Yeah. I mean, I was a fan of the Leafs more than the Habs, yeah. But I was a huge fan of yours, brother. You know, I wasn't confused. I mean, there's just something in me, the way I was raised, I guess, by my dad. I was a kid who got bullied, right? My dad's a savage. He didn't like this oldest boy coming home, you know, bloody and crying and all that garbage. And so he put me in martial arts at a young age in Milton. With Sensei Gord Krantz. And it's the kind of the Japanese style jiu-jitsu. It's not the kind on the ground, but there is some throws and holds and grabs and tournament style. And so I got into this, taught us discipline, you know. It was hard a couple days a week, obviously, just like anything's tough. But I did really well in the tournaments and I started winning them all. So then after that, I was like, I didn't know. I mean, I was like a soft kid with a big heart, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, once I got good at it, I was like, well, I'm not going to let anyone I love or my teammates ever get bullied again. So pretty much from a young age, I've been doing this. Like, my job in my dad's eyes was to make sure my brother and sister were great and that no one messed with them. So, you know, I've kind of been doing this enforcer role, even though it wasn't on a team, since I was a young boy. So, yeah, I don't know any different, really, buddy.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because there's similarities there. My dad was a military man, and he was a disciplinarian, but he was one of them guys that always
instilled in me to be able to not only stick up for myself, but those around me, my friends, my family, that kind of stuff, and not be the guy who's picking on the other kids. He would never put up with it. And he kind of, it helped shape me into the player I became in the way I was on the ice. But that being said, so you take the jiu-jitsu and you start training that way. When does hockey come into it now? When did you start playing hockey? And as a young kid, obviously fighting, you couldn't fight in the game as a young kid, peewee, bantam, stuff like that. So how did the hockey start for you?
Well, when I was, my dad was a supervisor of plumbing at Toronto Airport, all three terminals, and my mom was an RN. So we didn't play like, you know, high-level rep hockey, AAA, and all that when I was real young. So we were kind of playing house league, and then in Milton, Ontario, is where I'm born and raised. And then we moved. But so they made me go up. So I was just like a centerman, you know, win the draw. I was big, bigger than everyone else, dangle up and just score a million goals. You know, it's house league. It's not hard, but got to play for my dad. And then they made me go up into the rep levels. And then we ended up moving to Cambridge, and I tried out for double A, which was the highest we had in our city at the time. There was no triple A. And I was always a defenseman. So obviously with all the rule changes in pro over the years, if I wanted to continue to play after they got rid of clutching and grabbing and the can opener and the abuse in front of the net, what you had to take, you know, the game got a lot faster. So I would be handing out a little bit more speeding tickets, right? Or slashing wrists because the guys got were a lot better. So I switched to forward, but now, you know, growing up, you know, I was more of a player, obviously, and I was the captain of our team and the Cambridge Hawks, AAA. My brother, I got to play with my little brother. He's a stud. He went to Union. So that was cool. He played up with us, and he's one of our best forwards. He's he's got bigger legs, bigger hands than me. I mean, he's like a unit. He looks like a Rottweiler puppy. he's a truck. Like, I've seen him hurt some big guys off ice. But he's 5'9", and I'm 6'3". So, and then at 15 years old, you know, the under 16s or whatever they call it, under 17s, made it to the final camp but didn't make the team. My age group of 79, guys on that team would be like Joe Thornton. He was a stud in our league before he went to the OHL very young. Brian Campbell, Mike Van Ryan, call it Giacomo, guys like that. That's my age group. But I got seen at the final camp by a bunch of teams and got these invites, right? So you know how it is in Junior B, you know, we're your hometown. We had a Junior B team called the Cambridge Winterhawks. They own my rights. So you really are supposed to just play for them. But there was a loophole back in the day, and my dad was smart enough to figure it out, that if you went to Tier 2 Junior A, they couldn't hold you back. In my hometown, they used to get a lot of guys from the Sioux and Sudbury and were real favorable to them. And so the hometown kids kind of get lost in the shuffle with politics and buried, really, ride the pine or not in. So I skipped that. I went and played for Greg Ireland and Scott Abbott, who invented Trivial Pursuit with the Caledon Canadiens. We wore your jerseys. Montreal Canadiens, it was the best team ever. We had Dana Zubris on our squad. We got treated like we were the Montreal Canadiens, all leather jacket. I mean, we got treated amazing. And I left home at 15 to play in Bolton, Caledon. We won the whole thing. And
with the Caledon Canadiens, right?
Yeah. So, you know, when you're a big kid that can skate and you played like me, I just hit everything that moved, right? It was old school D style. You know, it's just a good hard pass, D to D up the middle, D to D up the wall. You know, it's not like I was scoring. I had like 2 goals that year or something like that. But when you're blowing up their skill and you're, you know, I was thinner. I was like 195 as a 15-year-old. So not a small kid, but not a giant, 6'2 at the time. And you blow up their talent. Well, the other team's tough guy wants to come out and they jump me, right? And we had cages. So I got to play with Roger Maxwell. Roger Maxwell won 2 Calder Cups, big, tough guy. And he worked with me. He told my dad, he said, you got to bolt Trevor's helmet. The way he plays, the guys are going to come after him. So, you know, you're just kind of fighting out of fear. So, you know, you can't fight in AAA. I was scoring goals and the league captain of our team in AAA. And then when you go to Tier 2 and you're smashing skill, then the big boys come out. So they didn't know, there was no tape back then, as you know, so it's not like you can go study guys. So they just grabbed me and I'm just chucking left hands down the pipe. They have no idea that I'm a lefty. So I was like surprising some guys and some guys I shouldn't be surprising. So my coach calls me in the office after the first month or two, sits down, you know, you never want to get called in the office when you're a young, tough guy, you're the youngest guy in the team. There's a couple other 15-year-olds and Greg Ireland, he coached in the NHL for forever. So Greg goes, Gilly, I got one question for you. He goes, how'd you think you did last night in the fight? And I fought the toughest guy in the league besides Roger Maxwell. I said, ah, coach, you know, like, I think I could have done better. He goes, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, had a little bit of a black eye. And he's like, he goes, are you fucking kidding me, kid? He goes, that's the toughest guy in the whole league besides Roger Maxwell on your team. He goes, I got another question. Did you like it? I said, oh, yeah, coach, I just love that feeling, you know. And he goes, well, good, kid. He goes, we didn't know you could do all that. He goes, can you promise me you play like that every single night? And I said, yeah, yes, sir. If that means I'm on the squad the whole year. And so I just kept it going. And then he pulls open his drawer on the side of his desk. And he pulls out this list. It's like a, you know, like game notes thick. And it's all the names. Like back then, you know, before the draft in the OHL draft, it's like they call it double A player, A player, all the way down. Well, I was listed as like high. So it's like first or second round. And he said, he goes, you know what the OHL is, Gilly? And I said, yeah, you know, the Kitchener Rangers. I knew the local teams, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. Like, you know, I knew some of the teams. He goes, well, it's the best league, you know, with the WHL and the Quebec Major Junior kid. He goes, keep doing what you're doing. And then we ended up winning a championship. And Zubris, you know, obviously went 15th overall from that team right to the NHL with the Flyers. So, you know, every night you had 30 NHL scouts or whatever the amount of teams was at the time and OHL scouts. So I kind of got lucky, you know, I was in the right place at the right time or I would have got buried in my hometown.
So you end up going north. You played North Bay, then Sarnia, and then Oshawa. That junior career, when you look at those teams you played for in those years, which was your best year in junior that you enjoyed, that you really felt like, man, I got this thing down?
Once I went to Oshawa, I probably, to be honest, I got to give a little credit here. So I played for Mark Hunter. I got traded, and, you know, he's a tough guy. Obviously, you know, the tough family. Farm boys. And, you know, I went 19th overall to the O. So in my mind, I was a defenseman. Well, he wanted to make me into what I became, like, you know, banging bodies, left winger that hits anyone and fights everyone and creates havoc and energy. And I didn't like that. So he thought I was a little heavy at the time. So I got absolutely roasted every day. That was a first for me. The bag skates was wild, especially from him. But it's kind of taught me a lot that I ended up, you know, realizing, like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to be putting a lot of extra time in the gym, bag skating skills. So anyway, we didn't exactly see eye to eye. So I asked for a trade and I got traded to Oshawa. So my 2 years in Oshawa, unbelievable guys. I'm still in contact with many of them. And both years there were awesome. I got to play. We had a great, great team, a lot of draft picks. And so I love my time in the OHL. But Oshawa was the highlight for sure.
Were you trying, being a martial arts guy or that background, did any of that apply at all in the fighting on the ice? Were you trying to improve your fighting at that time or were you just chucking?
To be honest, back then in the OHL, I'm sure, you know, Knuckles is very much the same as, you know, you're really just working on your game. You know, it was, you know, I was a lefty. So it's not like I wasn't one of these guys that started taking boxing at a young age or anything like that. Like, you know, kind of the whole mentality was, all right, you know, let's have a punch in the face contest and see who's tougher, right? It wasn't about like defense and going away from the power and cross grabs and all the different things I learned later on when I got dropped by Bugard. I'm sure we'll get into that. You know, so I was just going toe to toe, and you know, you're taking a lot of licks that way. That was just the way it was. That's the way Knuckles was doing it against all the guys in the NHL, and that's just how we did it. No, man, I was just, when someone wanted to go, you know, you accept the challenge and do it for the crest on the front, not the name on that back, and go to the box and get back out and try to get back to playing hockey.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community. So that fighting style, and I'll tell you when it happened to me, and it was pretty quickly, and I'm glad it happened to me. I fought Jonathan, and it was my first year, fought Stan Jonathan, and then O'Reilly. And O'Reilly, I just said, I'm going to go. I know he's a lefty, and I threw one punch, and he come back and hit me with two quick lefts in the nose. Didn't break my nose, but I didn't know where I was. The blood was pouring out of my head. And I went to the penalty box, and certainly my pride was wounded. And I sat there, and O'Reilly's going, he pointing at his left, and I'm going, oh. And I just sat there, and I said to myself, I can't fight like this moving forward because a lot of the guys are bigger than me. I'm just under 6 feet, 200 pounds. And I said, if I keep going like this, I won't last. I won't have a career. I'm going to end up breaking my jaw, breaking my nose. I'm going to end up getting hurt bad. And not so much the hurt part worrying about that. It's just thinking that I'm not going to be of any use to my team if I'm losing fights all the time. I have to stop fighting smart. And from that point on, and it was a good lesson for me, I started to really become a more technical fighter instead of wide open. And it really helped me with my longevity. Plus, and like I wanted to play too. So I had to make those adjustments. When did you make those adjustments? And you know, there's still a lot of fights I saw you in that, yeah, you stand and throw them, but I also see those techniques when you'd switch hands and be able to go righty or lefty and grab across, whatever tech. When did that change for you? What are some of the little things that really helped you moving forward after that?
Once I got to pro hockey out of the OHL, I didn't play overage. Because quite frankly, there was all the other guys were leaving, right? You know, Kip Brennan, all these other guys were leaving the OHL, and I wanted to go try the pro game. So, you know, realizing pretty fast when you get called up and you grab onto a guy like, you know, me and Joel Terrio, and realizing like I'm like a child compared to him, like in strength. You know, and some of these other guys that I had to fight, like Justin Sawyer. I mean, I was a kid, I was 20 years old, you know. Had the long, like, blonde hair when it was cool. I was all about, like, the extracurricular off the ice, let's just say, with a different type of species than us. So, you know, I learned pretty fast. So after that first year, I was like, I heard about this awesome family in Canada, in Ontario, the Vanderpools. So Keith Vanderpool is a trainer, and his two brothers are Sid Vanderpool and Fitz. So I work with Sid and Keith a lot. Sid and Fitz were world close to world champions, boxers. And so Keith trained me, you know, sprints, you know, all kinds of stuff, plyos, hand pads. And, you know, I didn't really have much of a right hand, to be honest with you, at that time coming out of junior. So they just kind of, you know, and they started to learn that they tied me up, right? So I was like, well, I got to throw both. So I would always box right-handed training. So I can go lefty boxing, but I'm always hitting mitts and everything. I can go back and forth, right? So that was the start of it. And then teaching, you know, how to get the whip at the end and the snap. Yeah. Most guys only throw to here instead of it being snappy all the way, right? Yeah. So that helped a lot. I love that man. Someday, as business keeps growing, we'll be going on a trip together as a thank you. Barely charged me. I was his first pro hockey player he trained, and then he ended up working with tons of guys that made the NHL, like Brian Little and all kinds of guys from Cambridge. And he worked PK Subban used to come train with us when he was a young guy. But just an incredible people. And then I just kind of stayed with that. Like, once you get to pro and you realize, like, well – you know, I'm getting to play a lot in the coast, and then you go to the A and I'm not really playing a lot, use more as just that heavyweight enforcer role. I'm like, you know, you obviously are still working on your game, but you realize like, if I, this is the way I got to make it. So then you just try to grow your box as big as possible. So get as good as possible. So, you know, hopefully you're, you know, like me and you, I mean, we seem like we're doing pretty good mentally. Whereas yeah. a lot of guys, our brethren, are not, or
yeah.
Past. He was talking to me, Nux. He was talking to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Stace, for sure. You were definitely chucking them. But, so yeah, I just constantly worked on it. At the end, once I got called up to the NHL, I had fought a lot, before that, in the AHL, and the concussion protocol is pretty lax. I mean, never no excuses. I'm a firm believer in once you become good at making excuses, you rarely become good at anything else. So I told our trainer, Angel, I said, I'm going up, you know, because I was a little dinged up, let's just say. I'd fought Josh Gratton, a bunch of guys that year. And then Derek Bugard was the duck killer, and he had already devastated two awesome guys that are great fighters I have a lot of respect for, and Todd Fridge Fedoric and Kip Brennan. And so I was next in line, right? Like, I was the one protecting the talent down in the jungle in the AHL. And I went up with a stupid ass mentality, to be honest with you. In my mind, I was like, you're going to make me or break me. And I wanted to go him toe to toe because I had already done very well and put him down in the American League when I was with Hartford, when he was with Houston. And so let's just say it didn't end well, right? I couldn't even tell you, Nux, if the punch was hard, which we know it was, because the only time I've ever been knocked out from a fight, I've knocked myself out many times from hitting people.
Did he hit you on the chin on that one? Was it right on the chin hit you?
Yeah, he hit me directly on the chin with a perfectly placed uppercut, pulling my head forward, which exposes. And I was kind of a little all over the place because I missed my grab because he's like a giraffe. He's hard to grab, you know? So, But it was like us going to like our favorite Morton's or our favorite steakhouse, you know, in Montreal or Boston, and you get the high-end Wagyu filet, and it's like that, you don't even need to cut that meat, right, with that garlic butter. It just was perfect. So that's what it was. And as we know, the sweet science of fighting, most people like think we're knuckle-dragging Neanderthals, but we're actually very intelligent and study this craft. It's a job, and it's a craft. It's a skill. You know... It was perfectly placed. And, then I got better and went back to the drawing board. And after that, I'm like, all right, I got to take this to a new level here. So that whole summer, obviously went back down to the A and was doing very well. Fought again, probably my first game back for sure, but I think first shift, and just kept doing that. And then never got another shot until I was my 31st birthday. The Isles called me up. But I had three fight coaches here locally, Stevie Dement, Chris Elms, and Mark Grubel. Mark Grubel will be the head coach when we have Olympic kickboxing. He's an incredible coach. He's had many, Nate champions in kickboxing. Stevie Dement is one of my good buddies. He's a client of mine as well. I was with him last night. He fought in the World Combat League, which is Chuck Norris. And then the other guy is like a scientist. He's never drank. He's never done drugs. He's a straight edge. He throw a butter knife into a piece of wood, like across a bar. I mean, he's a scientist at fighting, everything about it. He's our Muay Thai coach. He's like a 4 or 5 degree Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. I mean, the guy's a scientist. So, you know, he taught me all fighting on angles. So, like, you know, a wait for a guy to miss, you know, hockey guys trying to throw that loopy shot. You just stuff it or triangle blocks and then be able to grab their right arm. He just taught me a lot of really cool stuff with full grabs to be able to pull away where now I got the right hand and then I rotate them. And then if you go with that, well, now when you rotate them and then go this way, they can't land a left. They can't land a right. So it became more of a science. Like, I'm just trying to take their weapons away because, like you said, I was small, like, you know, 6'3", 230 in the NHL. That was tiny for the guys I'm fighting. So, you know,
I can't imagine that being small.
It was small. I mean, I think there was like Bolton, Sean Thornton. I mean, there's a few guys that were smaller than me, but not many. They're all bigger. Cam Jansen's, you know, he's a tough warrior. All these guys are tough. You know, you don't make it to the big leagues fighting unless you're a killer, you know.
Are you ready to take your love for hockey to the next level? Join the Fight Club Raw Knuckles exclusive Patreon to unlock amazing perks like ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and even a chance to win a game day experience with me in the Habs Cave. Don't miss out on this ultimate hockey experience.
Gills, you're such a humble guy. I you admit to these losses or these tough fights. What was like one of your biggest victories for you?
At what level? NHL? I got a couple.
All right. Tell me a couple.
So, yeah, I got to clear the cobwebs every once in a while. I went and got me a Vietnamese coffee, boys. I like to stay caffeinated, so it's like 5 shots of espresso, so I'll be buzzing here shortly. Game ready, as we call it. So, when all that stuff happened in the NHL against the Pittsburgh Penguins, I knew that I was going to have to pay the piper, right? So... they obviously have a nuclear weapon, like every NHL team besides probably Detroit at the time. Almost everyone had a nuclear weapon, is what I call it. A guy like me and Knox that is there to make sure that the brothers can skate freely and play their game, regardless of what you have to do. So I go out after we both are suspended for a long time, and I'm getting bagged every day, like skill drills, I'm hitting mitts. I mean, I'm practicing because I know I'm hitting them with the fight guy. I know that when I come back, I got to fight the hand of God, and probably as soon as I touch the ice. And so that's exactly what happened. The hand of God is Eric Goddard. He, in my opinion, very underrated, one of the toughest fighters of my generation. And so I go out left wing, he's right wing. And we don't we got a lot of respect for each other. He was real good to my brother in the AHL when he got called up. We fought a lot already. And I know how hard he throws. I mean, his right hand is a missile. So I go out beside him and we just kind of, leaning on each other a little bit, but we're not being like forceful or nothing. Then I go, hey, Godsey. I said, pretty sure we got to get this out of the way, eh, buddy? He goes, yep. And then I go right off the draw. He goes, yep. And so it was on. And in that one, all my training that I was getting up at like 6 a.m. and doing fight training, before that year when I made it, every single morning I was doing fight training at 7 a.m. My mentality was these other guys are not doing this. Like, so this is going to, you got to kind of find a little inch or an edge, right? I knew I wasn't there to score damn goals. I only had 2. So, so I was like, well, I'm just going to work harder than everybody. And that's how I'm going to, get my edge. So I cross grabbed him. I got his right hand on purpose. Like I practiced, I did that thousands and thousands of times.
I saw it when you reached across and grabbed him. You focused on getting there at the start.
Already gotten me like earlier in the year a couple times with some missiles. And luckily I wore that Easton helmet that was literally like God designed it for my round head.
You had to surprise him, yeah.
Yeah, right. I had to. And then I get it and I don't let it go. So then I just stayed on the gas pedal. And that was a big win for me. So like,
yeah, it was.
And then all the, cause he's a killer. And I love the guy. Almost all the guys that do our job are like just friendly, really, really good guys. Right. There's not many assholes, but, you have to be, it's a humbling job. One night you can be a man. And then the next night you could be looking up at the lights and get embarrassed in front of 20,000 and all your friends and family watching.
So here's a question I want to ask you, and I love the fact that I was drafted by the Canadians. I love the fact that I got the opportunity here. And I always look back and say, geez, if I went to another team, just maybe, they would have been happy with me just being a fighter and just going out and doing that job. When I came here, I had coaches that really worked with me day in and day out to help me become a better player. Did you have coaches that ever pulled you aside and said, listen, Trevor, like I had Jacques Lemaire come to me. He said, Chris, you fight too much. What are you doing? Slow down. And I almost didn't trust them because I'm like, I always saw with the Bruins growing up, when a guy slowed down and didn't fight no more, he was out the friggin' door. See you later. So I'm like, man, but he said, listen, I want you to play. And then he worked with me every day. He would take me aside and show interest in me as a player. And Wando, he said, you can play this game. He gave me so much confidence. Like, and I needed that because I was a little, at the beginning, a little bit lost and disillusioned a bit because I was sitting on the bench. I had to wait my turn and all that. Did you ever have a coach that says, hey, Trevor, I want to help you become a better player. Can we do this? Did you have that coach? And if you did, who was he?
Had a few, and I would love to name them all. I appreciate you asking that question because none of us do it alone. You don't get an opportunity unless you're willing to put in an insane amount of work, a lot more than all the talent, right? And as you know, you put the work in, and that's why you were a great player. I was a defenseman. So when I got called up, you probably know this man. He lives in Charleston now. His name's Tom Rowe. And very intimidating guy to play for. I absolutely loved him. So I get called up, have a meeting with Tom, and he says, hey, Gilly, he's like, you know, we were really soft. So he said, we got a really soft team, but we're talented. He's like, we don't have anyone like you, bud. So I beat Varhog, who is signed, Mike Varhog. He's a giant, and he broke his hand fighting me. So he was signed by them. So that's how I got the call. Peter Cooney was my agent and lives in Longmeadow, loves tough guys. So I go in Tom's office, shake his hand. He's got the firmest handshakes. I always worked on my handshakes after that so I could make sure he didn't squish my hand like I was a little runt. He's like, you know, and he gets your attention. So he told me, he goes, Gilly, this is a real tough weekend. He's like, we play Portland. I already knew who they had, obviously. They had Mad Mel Engelstad. And then we flew into Newfoundland to play St. John's, and they had a bunch of guys, but the two that I fought were Doug Duell and Nathan Perot.
Yeah.
And I fought my first shift. I went out beside Mel Engelstad and asked him very politely. I said, hey, Mad Mel, I'd be honored if, you know, give me a shot. I'd love to have you on my fight card. And he just, like, it was hilarious. He just, like, goes like this. And he like he looks at the back of my jersey, and I have like a baby-faced assassin. I had no facial hair. And he goes, you sure, kid? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I go, that's what I got to do, bud. And he goes, all right, kid. He goes, if you want to go, he's like, we're going to do this like men. He's like, we're going to take our helmets off and go to center ice, show them what we're about. I said, okay, yes, sir. Like, and then so I had a good fight. I didn't win. The hair covers it up, but it was like a war. But he cut me right here. I got a scar right here from him, a little memory, thanks to Mad Mel. And then the next game, I fought twice. And so Tom called me in during the week in practice. And I was like, ah, shit. I knew I did well. But, you know, when you're getting called in and you just got called up, means you're probably going back down in my mind. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have thought that way. But like, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. So I go in, I have a little meeting with him. He asks me, how's it going? And he tells me he's going to take me out of the hotel. So this man literally drove together in his, what I call his Nazi wagon. It was always spit shine perfect. It was a Mercedes black. And we drive to New Hampshire, UNH, to where his daughter was. And he literally takes me. His daughter agreed. And she was like it wasn't a Grand Cherokee. It was a Jeep Cherokee Sport. And he went and got me a car from his daughter. Like, that's how much he cared for me. And said, just make sure it stays clean, oil change, and look after it like it's your own. I said, yes, sir, of course. And so he ended up getting me an apartment. I moved in with a guy, last name McDonald, great guy. And then Tom went to work. He said, kid, you got NHL toughness. He's like, we got to make you a player. So I was kind of playing D in some of those games, and he put me on forward. So he goes, if you're willing to put the work in, kid, he goes, I'm telling you, it's going to be real hard. I'm going to know how much you want it or not. He's like, but it's going to be every day. I said, yes, sir. And so he'd get the stopwatch out. We'd be doing stick handling, cutbacks through cones, like sprint drills, like tips, like all he worked with me every single day. So we do a practice, all the skill guys, you know, back then, it's not like they were super friendly with a guy like me coming up. Cause I'm taking some Euro pussy's job of someone else. And, you know, so they just kind of like watch like I'm just a circus animal. So they're all in their clothes about to go to lunch, and I'm still grinding on the ice. It's just me and Tom Rowe. So I love that guy. I mean, I was getting close in the East Coast League to being a veteran, and they don't give veteran jobs to, you know, tough enforcers at that level. It's usually like your 100-point guy or your goalie, you know, skill players. So it kind of, once I got to the A and Tom put that timing with me, it's like my clock restarted. So now I'm like a nobody. Like I got all these games. So he was huge for me. And then playing for Marty McSorley, I'm sure you had many with him.
Yeah.
I played for him the next year. He was amazing for me. Just a great guy. You know, we'd be getting smoked. We weren't very good. Springfield Falcons that year, which was like 03-04. But I had 35 fights for my idol. And he, you know, he taught me a lot, you know, and that was, the league was very, very tough at that time. I think the two toughest years in the AHL ever was that year, 03-04 and 04-05, the lockout year. So I mean, we'd be getting pumped like 4-5-1, you know, whatever. He'd come in, he wouldn't even, like, he was disgusted with our team, and he wouldn't even say anything to the guys, but he'd look at me and be like, "Billy." And then I'd go out to the other room by the training room and all that. And he always dressed nice. Marty always looked good. He had like a 3-piece suit on, you know, like the vest, the jacket. And he'd be like, "Hey, great fight there against Stock." He's like, you know, he's like, "Do this." And then he's like showing me, he's grabbing onto me with a 3-piece suit. And I didn't want to grab his nice suit and mess it up, you know? And then he's like, "Hey, try this." So he was just great. Like, besides like how tips on fighting, because obviously he's like a, you know, Google or encyclopedia back in the old day, just like you would be. It was more of learning when to fight, you know, when to do it, when not to do it, you know, making sure you're not being taken out of the game, because I was the lone gun. I wanted to go there. We had no middleweights. We had no other one. I wanted to be the lone gun because I needed to fight everyone to be able to get a name and be established. So now I can not make East Coast League money and try to get a chance to be a full-time AHL guy. It's like steps, and then hopefully someday get a shot in the NHL. So he was phenomenal. I just had so many, man. The end of my
career. It's funny you say that, the lone gun, because I felt the same way. Like, I didn't want, when I played in Montreal, I remember Kordick came in. I didn't want Kordick there, honestly, and no disrespect to him. I didn't feel like I needed his help. I wanted, plus I didn't want to lose my job, right? And you must have had to deal with that a lot, right? Mentally, that's a tough thing when you're doing that job and then somebody else comes in, you're like, and we have plenty of guys that if push came to shove, I mean, Chelly was always there, Shane Corson, Larry Robinson. We had guys that, you know, Mike McPhee, Ryan Walter, not guys that were fighters, but, you know, they'd have your back.
Yeah, they had balls and they were willing to do it for the brotherhood. Yeah. I love those guys.
So I had that. I dealt with that, and that lone gun. I wanted to be the lone gun. I didn't want to give it up to no one. So you must have, I mean, everywhere you went, you must have had that feeling, no?
Well, I loved it when I was, but, you know, the next year I went from being the lone gun to being signed to my first NHL deal with the Rangers. And I've obviously played for Jimmy Schoenfeld and Nicky Fatio was our assistant coach. Yeah, I love him. He's a great guy.
Pie face. Awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And so he was great for me, too. He put a lot of work in with me. Ryan McGill. I love playing for Gillich. I call him Gillichron. He's a savage. But they love me. But, you know, that year I was trying to be in the top of the league because I knew the next year NHL was going to be back on, right? So, I don't know, I had like 20-something fights and like 20-something games, and then I shattered my foot. I ended the year with 35-49 that year. But I was a midget on that squad. We had, when I broke, shattered my foot blocking a Kevin Dahlman shot, Steve McIntyre got called up, so kind of like work with him, and we're good buddies. We had Martin Grenier, myself, Craig Weller, Ryan Hallweg, Dave Lifeton. I mean, we just could keep going. But we had a lot of skill guys, but we had some serious meat. And I was tiny, you know, like three of those dudes are bigger than me, a lot bigger than me. So, you know, I was just real blessed to have like a lot of coaches willing to put the time in. I'm not going to say like it translated to, you know, scoring, because obviously we know that's kind of a natural gift. But where I got to play, where you can be, you truly believe the problem with the heavyweight division was when guys used to go out and be like, we all know each other, right? It's all the same guys. It's a small fraternity. And be like, you know, hey, brother, kind of almost like, you know, politely, like, you want to have a fight so we're relevant? Like, you know, that's a fucking problem. That's not fucking enforcing, as you know. So
yeah,
but when you're constantly going over the boards and you can fly in on the forecheck and get great clean hits and you're licking their talent, their top offensive D-man, you're running their skill. Well, then even if they don't want to fight you, they have to, you know, because you're embarrassing them and you're taking their players out. So I truly believe you got to be able to bang bodies in the old game. It's obviously
a Gills, did you ever have any fear? Or like, what was it like the night before a game? Would you sleep pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain guys for sure. I mean, I got to be honest about that. There's certain guys where, you know, your pregame naps might not have been as fun as some others. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't really know what anxiety is, Stapes and Nylon. You know, I'm a pretty happy cat, you know. It's a challenge, right? Like, there's no better form of competition than two guys going to center ice and, you know, showing up and, you know, showing out for their brothers. I mean, it is a massive adrenaline rush. So, you know, it's just, I think, you know, you have so much anxiety from a young boy, like playing just triple A hockey and all that stuff, that you just get used to dealing with it. I don't even know what it is, but I know that I've had it. You know, you just go out, and if you're not willing to do it, someone else is willing to come up and do it a lot less. You know what I'm saying? So you might as well take the approach of, well, I'm going to take great pride in this and love it, because everything is a lot easier when you truly love it and you got the balls to push through. Like, okay, my hand's banged up. Well, whatever. I mean, you know, Niles knows, like, a lot of times you're having to fight again because that's your job. I mean, you got to be there for the boys. Like, and you might not have any damn skin on your knuckles, you know, like I can't even straighten my fingers anymore, but it doesn't hurt. It works.
You mean biting hunks of skin off like that? Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was like, looked like friggin' hamburger helper.
I got to ask you about the Penguins. The brawl in New York. How did that all start? And was it just in the course of the play that started, or was there something else there before that whole thing happened?
No, there's a lot more. Yeah, as you know, and it's a great question, so thanks for asking. But as you know, nothing just goes wild like that for no reason. Like, this is the National League. We're not confused. There's cameras everywhere. We have two referees and two linesmen. You're not getting away with shit. So we play them earlier, like, and our goalie, who was one of the reasons I got called up, Rick DiPietro, I love the man. Hardest working athlete. Looked like the muscle chart at the damn gym, at the doctor, you know, like, he has no fat. Like, this guy's shredded to the damn bone. He's ripped up like a bad report card. He got sent down after, you know, some operations and stuff to Bridgeport. And the year before, I'd hit my bare head on the ice fighting Bissonnet. And I had a bad concussion and pretty much was told I should never play. I should never hit. She wasn't going to clear me. And I looked at the lady and I said, well, I respect your professional opinion, man. She was actually really good looking too, by the way. So I go, I appreciate your professional opinion, man, but I can assure you, yeah, I know that my memory and some of the things on this test, as you say, like the stupid pen and paper and the computer test, are not up to par for what you think or how I tested before. I probably should have not went as hard on the test, I guess, so I could get back out there, because that's what we want to do. But I said, I will get better, and I can assure you, ma'am. Like, at the time, I was making 115 in Albany, which is a good living. So, you know, for my job at that level at the time. I mean, I know they make more now, but I was like, unless you got $115,000, ma'am, to $600,000 a year, I was like, for me to do something else, I go, I can assure you, I'm going to come back. I'm going to train harder than ever. I'm going to hit more than ever. I'm going to fight more than ever if they'll fight. And I'm going to make the NHL, ma'am. She goes, she looked at me, she goes, well, I think you've lost your mind. I think you're crazy. And I said, well, you might be right. I might be a little crazy, but it's going to happen. And then so that summer, I popped out of the, you know, the fog around June. And then I just went to work, man, like went to the lab like a savage with those fight coaches. I went to Burggraf skating conditioning camp. I mean, I went all in. Like, I was just constantly on the ice, constantly working. And then I made the NHL the next year in 6 months.
Calling all hockey lovers. Upgrade your podcast experience by becoming an enforcer. Gain access to the greatest hockey doc ever, The Last Gladiators. And don't settle for ordinary. Join the Fight Club over on Patreon today. Did you feel
that the NHL was out to erase you?
Well, it's an easy target, right? Anyone.
But did you get that feeling though? After, you know, you got that first suspension, then the Clutterbuck incident.
Well, if you watch the Clutterbuck incident, which I know you have,
yeah.
And I love him as a player. Like, I love him as an Islander. You know, let's get that straight right now. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him. I've never met him after the incident, but I've heard he's a phenomenal leader, and I love watching the guy play. I think we have the best fourth line in the league with him, Kazikas, and Martin. You know, just old school. They bang bodies. They kill penalties. They're just great. But, you know, he hits one of my young bucks from Bridgeport, who's a call-up, from behind, and I'm there. And he's kind of support. And his name's Justin DiBenedetto. He's a great kid. So he just gets railroaded from behind. And I'm not saying anything. Clutterbuck is, like, I think the league leader in hits, him or Martin, in the last whatever, ever, forever. But I'm there. So the only thing that I have a target on my back for sure, 100%, Chris. I mean, anytime you, after you get, you know, your first offense, you're considered a repeat offender. And it's a magnifying glass, right? It's not like I'm a 50 goal guy or I'm Charo when he took out Pacioretty, right? Like, he's a superstar. Yeah. You know, I'd finish a hit on him. And honestly, it wasn't that hard of a hit.
It wasn't that bad. It didn't look bad.
But what I did is, because I already got a target on my back, is like I follow up with some sweet chin music. I kind of like push his head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he did a really good job of winning an Oscar there. You know, and I get 10 games. So then it's back to the drawing board and, you know, bagging, and I'm around the boys. And but I stuck up for my teammate. You know what I mean? There was no fight or anything. But, like, yeah, that one sucked. I lost 64,000 when you're making 500 grand because you don't – the second suspension, you get dinged for practices and games. The first suspension, you still make money on practice days but not game days. So – yeah, that's, you're at almost 100,000 right there. So that's tough, right? But shit, it's still a million times more money than I was making playing in the best league in the world, living out my boyhood dream. So, you know, I got a lot of bad press, but no press is bad press, right? So
how about Clutterbuck coming out and saying there's no way that you should be in the National Hockey League? How did you feel about what he said?
I didn't even know he said that. I don't really care what he says. Or what anyone says. I mean, I earned it. Like, if you look at my history, you know, I don't think there's many people in the game that have a bad thing to say about me as a teammate or in the locker room.
No, I haven't heard anything bad about you.
In that. So, yeah, what? I mean, I'm a throwback from when you played. Well, that's the way, in my opinion, the game should still be played. So, you know, they can say what they want. It's just a typical what they got to say something because they can't do anything with physicality because, you know, guys like us are willing to back it up regardless of how big or tough the dude is. So the way I look at it is it's just typical. It's just like today's standards. It's the keyboard warriors. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone has something to say online because they know they're not going to get punched in the damn mouth.
How about Mr. Bugod, Len? He says, and now I get it. He lost his son, which is terrible. There's no, it's a tragedy what happened. There's no question about it, but he said, there should be no fighting allowed in the NHL. And, he believes his son would have never played in the NHL if there was no fighting. And, he thinks the first thing the NHL should do is get rid of fighting. What do you think? And I have an idea, but what do you think about that statement? And do you think the league will ever ban it?
Well, I think that all leagues are trying to make it not as relevant. That's obvious. East Coast League, after 10 fights, the 11th fight, you get suspended. American League as well. There's no more fighting in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. You know, I'm pretty well informed. I watch Timu Solani fights. I mean, I watch everyone fight. like, I loved it. So, you know, and I wouldn't have made the NHL without fighting and hitting either. But, you know, this is a man's game. Played with weapons on your feet and in your hands at a very fast rate of pace. And it's still, I know not maybe as much, but it's a self-police game. So, you know, if you take away fighting And I hate the loss of Derek Boogaard. It was, you know, it's so sad, and many other guys, you know, and obviously there's some other stuff there, right? Like, you know, he was in pain.
Substance abuse.
No, I mean, I'm not even saying that. I mean, we've all been through our stuff, right?
Yeah. Like,
but, you know, it was accidental painkiller and booze overdose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that could happen to anyone. We could go out for dinner together if we were doing that and one of us not wake up, you know? And I just hate that that happened. That destroys a family, right? It's very hard. But I still do think, so may he rest in peace, because, man, he was an animal.
Yeah, it was terrible what happened there.
He's an animal. But I do think that the gate's needed. There might not be – there's not going to be guys anymore like me and many, many others who were really there for one purpose, to protect the talent, you know, create energy, bang bodies. You know, now, you know, you'll see those guys still. Just it's not quite as tough, but they're very good players. They can play. And, you know, they're getting goals, 10 goals. They're playing 14 minutes, you know. They're not playing, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. But I think that it would be an absolute shame and a crime if it did come. I won't watch it anymore if they take it away. Like, I love when two field guys go at it, emotional fight, right? Battling, all of a sudden someone gets pissed and they go at it, right? I love that, like, spur of the moment fights. And you don't see anyone sitting in the stands when it happens. I mean, I think it's a shame. There'll be a lot more concussions and a lot more injuries if they take it out.
So with all these emotions and all these, the intensity and all these things on the side of fighting, what was it like for you to actually score a goal?
Oh, that's obviously always awesome.
Was it like just as high of a feeling? Would you rather score a goal than fight?
It's a different feeling. Nux, that's why Nux has got that great little shit-eating grin. He knows.
Yeah. So, my favorite thing, there is nothing for me. I don't compare it to winning a fight or knocking someone out. Scoring a goal in the NHL, not just a goal, but an important goal, is friggin' incredible. To me, it was no better feeling. I love it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and then it's like a reward for so much hard work and battling the politics and the up and down and the bus rides. I mean, I didn't get many, but, you know, yeah, it was an amazing feeling, right? Just seeing the boys' face when you go down the line, you know, they're so fired up when the tough guy scores, whether you score 1-2 or you score 20, you know, or 30-something, like, you know, Bob Probert and Chris Simon, may they both rest in peace, two of my idols. You are one of them as well. But
I appreciate that.
There's also, you know, something to be said for that adrenaline after going to war for, you know, 20 guys on the bench. It's wild drug. And why I did it so long is it's a great feeling, you know, to be able to stick up for other people that can't stick up for themselves. And that's wild, you know, it's a wild, they're both very high up on, you know, Trevor Gilley's favorite feelings and things to do in life.
Get into the action with Fight Club, Raw Knuckles' new exclusive Patreon. From ad-free episodes to uncensored content and discounts on merch, there's something for every hockey fan. Join the Fight Club today.
So Trev, just a couple things, the physical part for you now that the game is over, because certainly I'm 66. I mean, you're 45 years old. You still have a ways to go. But physically, how you doing? Like the hands, the head, do you ever worry about maybe CTE or anything like that? You ever?
No, I'm not really too worried about it, my man. After hockey, maybe a little bit I was, for sure. I got to admit that. You know, we're not superheroes anymore. We're not in our early 20s where we feel invincible. I'm sure you can understand that. But
for
for about a year or two, you know, most athletes, when they transition, go through a really tough period. It's like you lost your baby, you know. You lost your identity. You lost your love. So, you know, we all kind of go through that. So that was tough. But your body is just, once you stop really moving, like, you know, the dynamic warm-up, the practices every day, you know, all the stuff that we used to do. And if you're not moving, in my opinion, you're dying. So I was like real sore. Like I could really get out of bed. Like I broke my spine at the end of my career, tore my glute in half. you know, just all the injuries kind of add up. So it took a while. So I'm big on like these ice baths, you know, also, Riley Cote and those boys helped me with my last concussion, like high levels of THC droppers. So, you know, I don't take pills. I eat good. I work out. I'll go to the gym again tonight. Yesterday I did 6 miles. So, you know, I feel good now. So I think the key to success as we get older is if you're not moving, you're dying.
Yeah.
Your diet has to be good. Boozing's no good. So it's poison. So there's a lot of other natural remedies that we won't really get into that can truly help
your
brain and the body. And
I talked to Riley Cote about some of the stuff he was doing and has worked with. So, I had a couple more.
You are working with players now, right? Yeah. I was reading something.
No, I don't know how you heard that. That's impressive. So no, we don't have a hockey rink here in Augusta, Georgia. You know, we have a lot of golf. Jordan Smith is a guy I played with in Portland. You played with
him. With the eye issue, right?
He lost his eye, unfortunately. Yeah. A really good player, second round pick, tough kid. Went toe-to-toe with Jansen a couple times as a rookie. I loved him, and I still do. So he's an assistant coach with Springfield Thunderbirds. So I went and helped the kid 2 weekends ago in Charlotte. He connected me with him. He said he's like a young Trevor Gillies. He said he's an awesome teammate. Kid loves it. He works hard. He can skate. He's a good player. He's better than you, Gills. I said, okay, perfect. He has to be to make it. And I just kind of connected with this guy, and he's unbelievable. His name's Sam Bitten. So Sam paid for me a hotel where they were staying. AHL hotels have come a long way, Stapes. So we were staying in the Marriott downtown Charlotte. And I worked with him for 4 hours and 3 sessions, and on all stuff like where he's not going to get hit. You know, a lot of the stuff we were talking about that I learned, you know, what's the point of having a Google or encyclopedia of knowledge in Augusta, Georgia, if you can't help other people not be hit and to try to make a life for themselves. So I had a blast with the kid. Listen out for the name Sam Bitten. You know, he's not really on the radar, but I think this kid's, he's just great. So, you know, anything like that, if I can help people, I will. But we don't even have a rink here. I got to drive. If I wanted to skate, I'm skating tomorrow night for the first time in 4 years in full equipment. So that should be real fun for the heart. And that's in Irmo, South Carolina. So that's 88 miles from here to go pay to play.
So, Trev, before I let you go, I want to say a lot of respect for what you did in your career. The amount of years you played. Going from junior to the East Coast Hockey League, the American Hockey League, getting to the NHL, going to Russia. Incredible story. And I really, I look at it as one of perseverance and certainly a lot of honor in what you did as a player to protect other guys on the ice. That always comes with honor. And I just, it's a hell of a career for a guy who wasn't drafted, had a dream of playing the NHL, and yet ended up getting there. Now that I said that, what would be the first line of your hockey obituary, if you say? What would the first line be?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Eulogy, your hockey eulogy.
Yeah, I just had to do a eulogy recently. That was real tough. But to be honest, I would hope that it would be like, regardless of the incidents or things that I had to do, that I truly loved each and every guy and team like they were my own brother. And I tried to treat them as such. I think the work that I did outside, off the ice, in the locker room, bringing teams together, you know, whether it's a card game or dinners, that's kind of what I was best at, is making sure everyone's pushing and pulling and we're all on the kind of the same page, the same sheet of music, like a brotherhood, like a family. I hope that that's what I'm remembered for.
Trevor, I let me go over that again. I want the first line of your hockey eulogy.
Your one line?
Yeah, one line.
Put that together. The glue guy.
That's tough, man. I mean,
it's tough.
I'll think about that, and then I'll make sure I send you a text. I mean, that
We haven't gotten that answer.
I love it.
You know?
I love it.
That's good.
That's tough. Awesome. That's tough. You know, you got eulogy is a big deal. You have to come up with something, some gold. You know.
That is awesome. Hey, you know what? Another thing I did on just before we let you go. We have Bob Probert's wife on, and I know Danny. I know Danny well.
My daughter's name, Danny.
And she had mentioned to me about Bob's brain being donated to science at Boston University, which she did. She donated his brain. And she said, you know, Chris, you ought to think of doing that because it would help other people down the road who certainly like you and Bob, the job they did. But she said, one of the things I struggled with is they gave me a questionnaire and I really couldn't answer the questions because they were only things that Bob would know and what Bob went through. So she really kind of enticed me to do that. And I have. I'm going for my second year follow-up. And I'm glad I did it because it really – and I don't sit around thinking, oh, am I going to get CTE? Ooh, is this going to happen to me? Ooh, none of that at all. But – It when I went and did it, they really it was an eye opener for one, but it also gave me a good feel of where I am cognitively for someone my age. They can't tell you if you have CTE, but they're trying to, by going through this study, they're trying to find ways to detect it in early warning for certain people who may have it or may have some struggles with it. So just a thought, if you ever show any interest in that, I can certainly put you in touch with the right people. So I'm glad I did it. I'll be honest.
I appreciate really. That. And, you know, I might take you up on getting that info, regardless if I decide to do it or not right away. We created a group, Mike Scroy, Chuck Thuss heads it up, and myself. It's important to say on here because I know you got a big audience and I don't like plugging own stuff, but this is all we volunteer our
go
time.
Go right ahead.
We're not professionals, but we got tired of, you know, hearing about guys that, you know, you played with, that we played against or with, that are now past, you know, way before their time. So it's called the PHPA, Professional Hockey Players Association Compassionate Locker Room Group, and we won't meet tonight because it's the, you know, we met last Wednesday, but it's the second Wednesday or every other Wednesday, so twice a month. We'll have like guest speakers that talk about like breathing and things that you can do, you know, all different kinds of stuff. What guys have been through, you know, some real hardcore stuff, but it's all confidential, just like when we played.
Did you start this group?
It wasn't totally me. It was many guys, but Mike Scroy's idea. And then I was building my business. So I connected him with Larry Landon from the union and Chuck Fuss and gave him a ton of list of guys. I have a lot of ex-fighters in my phone. Obviously, that's what I like.
Good for you.
But it's a really cool awesome. Group, and it's helping a lot of people. Like, to see certain guys, I'll never say names. Like I said, it's confidential, but just to see, like, from tears to like them glowing, like they're pregnant, about to have a baby, and just them change their lives. And, you know, some guys get sober from it, and just all kinds of stuff. Like, I mean, we audio books and all kinds of stuff. So it's something that I'm real passionate about. You know, and there's a lot of ex guys, like if I name names, which we won't on.
No,
here,
you don't have to, but here's the deal.
It's awesome.
If you want, I'd be willing to come on there one night. If you want a speaker or you can, we can touch base and we can go from there. I'd love to.
We would love to have you. We've had some ex guys. We have ex like Navy SEAL, like Special Forces guys. We have people that, you know, that's what they do, is different therapies, like they're professionals. But we also just have like a forum where guys had a bad week or whatever he wants to talk about, he can. And we have a WhatsApp chat as well. And it's only for players. You had to have played in one of the leagues for the PHPA.
Is it a Zoom call? You do it on Zoom?
It's like what you did. You send a link it's awesome.
I'd love to.
Yeah, I would love to have you. So I'll tell Chucky about it. Chuck Thuss, he was amazing to me when I was a 20-year-old rookie. He was a veteran goaltender.
Okay.
Cool. He's dedicated his life to helping others.
Good stuff. Hey, shout out to our Hall of Fame member of the week, Jordan Turner. Jordan, I got to tell you, there's no bigger Raw Knuckles fan than Jordan Turner. We appreciate your support. Awesome stuff. And keep on listening, buddy, and maybe one day we'll drop the mix. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to the Raw Knuckles podcast. If you want the raw, uncut episodes, be sure to click the link below to join the Fight Club on Patreon.